believe we're ready to proceed. Ms. Klimek, you are quicker to the podium than I even thought here. So,
is it like I see the barn? And after listening to my last undertaking, I want to keep these real short. But I notice Mr. Lambrecht isn't here. Do we?
Yes, we can wait.
Do you want
just
us to go stick our nose out?
I'm sure he'll be here. Let's just take a moment till he returns. That maybe may assist as well. He may have similar questions to your own, so we'll just hang on for a second.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'll take this opportunity. I don't think we marked these as an exhibit, so that's probably a useful use of the time.
Indeed, I meant to do that. The photographs you're speaking about and
the photographs and the table.
Yes.
I think it's 137 and 138, sir.
Yes, that would be the order from there down. Yeah. Thank you for reminding me, Mr. Denston.
The pictures are exhibit 137 and the table at 138, I believe. Thank you.
Thank you. Problem. Please proceed, Ms. Klimek.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, panel members. Good afternoon, Encana panel. I have just a few questions for you, and I have one for you, Mr. Collister, or a couple. How many snake surveys have you done in the NWA?
I've done one very low intensity reconnaissance type survey.
And how long would have it taken you to do that?
It was just a couple of days.
Now, Mr. Fudge, if we could go to the LandWise report, and you were referring to pages, I think it was 111 to 113, as recommendations that Encana is prepared to accept. Do we get that up? Now, if we were to go to page 115, there's a recommendation to ensure adherence to site access recommendations. I noticed that wasn't...
Excuse me, but I said with respect to groundwater, and I said they accept in principle, and I did not say page 115. I said 111 to 113 as they applied to groundwater.
And my question is this one that Encana would be prepared to adhere to, this ensure adherence to site access recommendations?
As I said, I looked at this report for the on the groundwater aspects, and I discussed the groundwater aspects of the report with Encana staff and their hydrogeologist, in-house hydrogeologist. We did not look, I did not look specifically at that, and that was not my task.
Okay. Now, Mr. Hees, I'd like to talk a little bit about the incident that was referred to with the picture at page 35. And what were the crews doing on that site? What were they out there doing?
They were conducting a production casing integrity log.
And does the base require Encana to get a permit for that activity?
We have been in discussions with D&D about the requirements for permits for various types of activities.
Did the base at that time require Encana to get permits for those activities?
This was not an activity we understood. The permit was required at that time.
Okay. And do you know if you required an NWA permit to do that activity?
As as a result of our discussions, and the D&D did provide a routine activity permit already as an example, of course, with the cover letter that was attached. Once we assigned that permit, we effectively agreed, again, subject to the contents of the cover letter, to abide by those conditions for those activities. The activities that were not covered by that permit are still under discussion with the military.
And was this activity covered by that permit?
By the one that was signed?
Yes.
As the military explained, that was essentially light vehicle traffic. And the vehicles that are required for this particular activity, I think, would be outside of what the intent was in the original permit that they supplied us with.
Now, was it your understanding, in spite of your discussions, that D&D did want Encana to get permits for these activities?
Again, I think the cover letter that was supplied with the permit outlines Encana's situations. We have been in discussions for quite some time with the various equipment and various things that we might need to do to our wells out there. And upon signing of that condition, again, subject to the contents of the cover letter, we agreed to have those conditions apply to essentially light vehicle traffic. Heavier vehicle traffic is still under discussion.
Okay, but while it's under discussion, do you understand that D&D's position is that you should be getting permits till this is resolved?
And I believe that cover letter makes it clear that there is currently before the courts whether or not permits are required on any of our existing facilities and whether or not those are grandfathered. So discussions are continuing in regards to the heavier vehicles.
Those are all my questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Klimek. Mr. Lambrecht.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a few, and they're going to be reasonably straightforward, I think. I'd like to start with Dr. Walker. And Dr. Walker, it's just simply to clarify one or more of the pictures that we're using in your presentation. As I understand it, those pictures showed a caisson installed in the NWA. Is that correct? And if it is, could you pull that up just so that we could see?
Yes, that looks like a caisson.
And that's in the NWA?
Well, I'd have to check the, but you do make a point. It shouldn't have a case on it if it was 2001.
I think my point is there are caissons in the NWA. And if we were to have a picture of one, they would look like something like that.
Yes, that is in the NWA. That's just off Dugway Road to the east, the top of the hill.
All right, thank you. And Mr. Heeson, Mr. Linoff, a question for you. And it's really just one of terminology. Many times throughout the evidence, the term lease has been used. But my understanding is that there are no leases, as those terms are understood on private land in Alberta, so that entry onto the base is through the surface access agreement. And there, it's not then overlaid or reinforced by any other instrument called a lease. Is that correct?
While it's correct that our activities are covered under the surface access agreements, we have effectively been using a deemed lease of 100 by 100 meters for all shallow gas locations.
But the term lease is just a term used to refer to that area.
Generally, the word lease is referred outside the block to a specific well area and access trail. That's correct.
But outside the block, there will be leases, actual leases, instruments, legal instruments. And there's no such thing here inside the block.
Our access is governed by the surface access agreements.
Yes. Yes, thank you. Okay. Mr. Collister, your suggestion, did I understand you to suggest that the critical habitat for Sprague's pipit should extend into the national training area part of the block?
From my understanding of the evidence that has been that was submitted by Environment Canada and the process and the methodology that was used to calculate preliminarily assessed critical habitat for Sprague's pipit. With the caveat that RSFs to me are a bit of a black box, but nevertheless, and having been out on both the MTA, doing surveys on both the MTA and the NWA, seeing habitat on both, there certainly is higher disturbance occurring on the MTA side, but it's hard for me to see a difference between those two in terms of how that model would predict preliminarily assessed critical habitat if it was applied to the MTA.
And you understand that an extension of critical habitat into the MTA would have quite significant implications for your client in Canada?
I think what I would understand from my suggestion is, in fact, it's likely that if that model was applied to almost any piece of prairie in Western Canada, it would come out as preliminarily assessed critical habitat for Sprague's pipit and would not be very useful.
All right, but would you dispute the proposal that it's important to start somewhere to designate critical habitat for the Sprague's pipit?
I think if it was done in an objective way without being brought to bear in a particular situation with potentially a particular purpose, that it would be, yes.
All right, and so you're thinking that the use of a national wildlife area to start for the purposes of designation of critical habitat isn't objective? Is that what you're saying?
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Okay. Can I ask you a question about your two-week studies in 2006? You were referring to Table 5J1.
Yes.
My understanding is that the precipitation was very good in that year. Is that correct?
I think it was, yes.
Right. And that would naturally affect the number of birds that would appear in that study period.
I'm not sure about that, Mr. Lambrecht. You could consult with your own experts there who have put forward, I think, that it's, for some species at least, it's more important to consider the previous year's levels of precipitation. So it's a complicated issue, just what climatic variables are affecting these species and how.
All right. Now, I just wanted to get some clarity around the bird surveys of the NWA. My note may not be accurate, so I just want to get some sort of final opportunity to get clarity around the scope of the proposed bird surveys for the NWA. Is the entire NWA to be surveyed for all birds or some birds?
Are you speaking about the PDA or the monitoring program?
The PDA process, as I understand it. You were talking about the PDA process, and you were saying that the Burring Owl Survey would cover the entire NWA. Did I understand?
Yes, sorry. Again, if the question is specifically about the Burring Owl, which was the point that Mr. Collister was trying to clear up, I'm fine with that. But my friend has remembered a few questions he should have asked earlier. That's his problem.
Well, I'd be happy to leave the uncertainty around and just get to the Burrowing Owl. Is the Burrowing Owl survey going to be done for the entire NWA?
Yes, but it'll be phased over 3 years. So there, the third of the NWA that is going to be constructed or subject to shallow gas infill development in the following winter, the preceding summer, that area of the NWA would be surveyed, so that it would be right up to date and relevant to the construction period.
All right, thank you. And Mr. Fudge, I have a couple questions for you then. I was struck by, you were going through the numbers, but I understood you to say that they were all very vague with, and you had very low levels of confidence in them. Did that phrase, very low levels of confidence, apply to the estimates of groundwater use? Because the record keeping with respect to groundwater extraction in the recent years isn't very thorough or robust.
I was speaking not to the prediction of use, because it's pretty well established that it takes 165 or thereabouts cubic meters of water to drill, complete a well, that sort of thing. So in Canada, after drilling 10,000 wells, have a pretty good idea of what their usage is. I was referring to the estimates made by various firms, including LandWise and their predecessors, on what is the availability of groundwater in the NWA. And when you really look at it, they don't really have a great handle on it, and everybody's got a different number. And when I see 100% difference or greater in different reports, I'm thinking, yeah, this is not nailed down, and this is not based on empirical data that's strong. They have a few data points. They're extrapolating a lot. They're doing some arm waving, and I think LandWise admits, and I don't take them to task for it, that theirs is a very conservative estimate of groundwater availability in the major Lethbridge aquifer within CFB Suffield and adjacent areas. That's what I meant.
All right. Like, I heard numbers of 35, 45, 55, and 139, but I think LandWise does say at page 30 of its report that groundwater withdrawal records from 2005 to 2007 are much less detailed than
previous
years.
Could we bring them up? Then I have to look at that.
Yes, please. That's page 30 of the LandWise report, which is exhibit, as I understand it, 003A.
Would you like me to go through my presentation again for your benefit so you could understand the 55, 35, and the other numbers that I quoted? Because I thought it was fairly clear, and I actually asked a number of people, did you actually understand that? Because the 35 and the 55, let's not try to, you know, jumble the numbers together. They are different numbers. They mean different things, and the sources of that information are different.
I'd be quite happy just to look at page 30 and of the LandWise report, and it's under the heading Withdrawal and Water Level Records at Water Source Wells. And in the second paragraph there, first sentence, groundwater withdrawal records are from 2005 to 2007 are much less detailed. Water amounts are generally only recorded as total withdrawal per quarter rather than withdrawal at each pumping interval. Where meter readings were recorded for certain pumping intervals, the meter was reset to zero after each pumping episode. So cumulative water withdrawal amounts cannot be checked with recorded withdrawal amounts per quarter. The point I just wanted to make is that the record keeping isn't robust in the recent years with respect to groundwater withdrawal. And I'm asking if you would agree with that.
I don't know if robust is the proper word, but certainly there can be improvement made, and I believe in the acceptance of the groundwater monitoring recommendations in the LandWise report. And Canada's hydrogeologist recognizes that better record keeping should be kept in an ongoing basis as we go forward, regardless of the project. And in fact, a number of investigations and studies are underway by Encana in-house, quite divorced from these proceedings, to get a better understanding of the whole area and in particular the different layers of groundwater, the preglacial aquifer, the so-called Lethbridge aquifer, and the glacial sands and gravels above that, and the connectivity of those upper aquifers to actually wetlands and the separation, which by the way, in the LandWise report, speaking of the connection between groundwater and wetlands, they do suggest in their report that the deeper groundwater in the preglacial sediments is not connected strongly to the wetlands. In fact, it's the upper aquifer, a much smaller aquifer, that is not typically drawn by these wells, like the Dugway, Big Bob, etc. They draw from the deeper aquifer. That they suggest in the LandWise report they're not strongly connected to the glacial sediments and the wetlands above, so which is a good thing, and I was pleased to read that. And Canada's investigating that right now in terms of doing isotope studies on water from these different zones. Thank you.
Would you agree that a water budget is a good idea?
Yes, a water budget is a good idea, and in Canada's hydrogeologist has said he's undertaking one, and the problem, I think, really lies in the overall understanding of the regional groundwater itself. And as I say, when you look at these results, they're varied. What we do know is that the wells that are proposed to be used mainly by Encana are in a very good water supply area. They have not been drawn down. Their levels are not decreasing. They recover very well. And Mr. McNeil suggests that those are the wells that can be taken from. Also, you have to remember that Encana is not proposing to use only groundwater. They have a license to take 70,000 cubic meters of water out of the South Saskatchewan River during that winter period. They typically, in the past, have taken something in the order of 10,000 with the 70,000 license. And the city of Medicine Hat supplies water for the water trucks on their way in. They arrive at the at CFB Suffield full of water from the city. So there's a variety of sources, both ground and surface, that can be used. And a rigorous monitoring program and record keeping will ensure that if there's any problems can be anticipated in a go-forward basis.
Mr. Collister, I just have a few final questions with you, sir, and it's with respect to the question of snake mortality. Mm-hmm. With respect to the evidence given by Mr. Didiak regarding the 575 females and then his extrapolation of that in a sort of a mortality example, my understanding is that that number of females was taken from a study which was much smaller than the entire National Wildlife Area. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
All right. And you agree that his recommendations, which are at page 48 to 50 of exhibit 003051, are good recommendations?
48 to 50? Yeah, the ones I referred to?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Yeah. And is it fair to say that there's a disagreement between yourself and Mr. Didiak over the likeliness of population decline in rattlesnake
as a result of this project?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
And would you agree with me that with respect to speed limits generally, regardless of the speed of the vehicle, driver attentiveness is still an important factor in snake mortality? I mean, you can go as slow as you like, but if you're not looking for the snakes, you won't avoid them, even if you have time to do so.
I think that's true, and you know, of course, there's an intention here for Encana to, and their operators already are aware of and know that that's an issue, and they're looking for snakes. But another thing that hasn't been touched on in that regard, Mr. Lambrecht, is that people develop search images for things that they're interested in and trying to see. And I know I have experience, a lot of experience with taking folks out to watch birds or do natural history things, and it's amazing how people can't see things the first time they're exposed to looking at things, but if they're trying to, and after a little bit of experience, they can get very, very good at it, and even things that are very cryptic can be seen quite quickly and quite easily. So I think with the emphasis on looking for snakes and at the kind of speed we're talking about, 50 kilometers per hour, we've already stated that undoubtedly there will be a small amount of mortality, but that it will be small, and that a 50 kilometer per hour speed limit will make a big difference.
And then finally, the recommendations of Mr. Didiak that you said were good, my ear heard that you said they had formed the basis of Encana's proposed mitigation measures. When you say that they formed the basis of them, do you mean that Encana adopted those recommendations, or that they looked at those recommendations and then took some to form mitigation?
Encana didn't project? Look at those recommendations. I did, and I made the recommendation to Encana as to the package of recommendations that are included in the EIS.
Right, so some but not all of Mr. Didiak's recommendations are in the
EIS.
Yeah,
I'd have to. I mean, that was quite a while ago now, and I'm sure that it's not that I couldn't line everything up. That's right. I looked through and looked for the most significant ones, and I didn't leave any out for any particular reason other than that maybe.
Right. And so if we look in the EIS and compare that with the Didiak recommendations, we can
see
what the differences
are. Yeah, you'll see some
similarities.
Right.
And differences as well.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Well, listen, thank you, gentlemen. You've been very good, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lambrecht. Mr. Musso.
Just one question, and I think it's for Mr. Fudge, and I'm not certain what falls out of it. But if I look at the average use for the South Jenner and the Beaver Ridge, I assume they're wells, it's greater than the allocation. And I'm just wondering if you can comment on that.
Mr. Musso, what are you looking at exactly?
Looking at the...
Oh, the table I did up. Oh,
yeah, that you passed out today, and it sort of caught my eye, so...
Yeah. Well, okay, so the South Jenner is an interesting case in itself. It's far in the northwest corner of the Suffield base, as far away from the NWA as you can possibly get. It's way up there. It has not recovered as well as some of the other wells, and of course, this is an average based on past use, right? This is 2004, 2005 years averaged. And I think the province, in granting their license for this well, want to make sure that the allocation is kept under 5,000 because of past performance. If you go back to those tables that we looked at earlier, I don't suggest you do, but if you've got any spare time or anything, you can see that the South Jenner well does not bounce back as say Dugway and Big Bob have. So that's the reason there. This is a 2008 allocation. This is use in the past, right? So, yeah, the province, I believe, has brought that down, looking at the well records that are part of the licensing and the reporting on that, right? And they've said, yeah, we better. So I'm actually not aware of what the allocation was in the past. I guess it was higher, I assume. And anyway, that's that well, for whatever reason, up in the northwest part of the block, and it's right in the very corner of the northwest corner of the block, so for whatever reason, seems to have not respond quite as well. Perhaps the aquifer is not the same one as the Dugway Big Bob, the Lethbridge aquifer. So that's all I can tell you.
And is it same for the Beaveridge? Because that one's, it looks like the average use is considerably above the allocation.
Yeah, again, those are the allocations of the past, and the province has granted that temporary license at that level.
Oh, so these are.
But I think the Beveridge actually is a pretty good well. Looks like a good performer, and it doesn't show decline. But I can't really tell you what Alberta Environment's got in mind there.
Okay, so. That just gives. I think you said these. You just said these were temporary, but I think in your earlier evidence, you said that these. I think what you told me that these were temporary permits, but in your earlier evidence, you said that these were licenses. So
okay, sorry.
Is there a disconnect?
Yeah,
there?
I'm sorry about that. I apologize. I have them here, by the way, if you'd like copies. I have copies, but Dugway and Big Bob are licenses.
Okay.
Telfer, Beveridge, South Jenner are temporary licenses.
Okay. That's helpful, sir. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, those are my questions.
Thank you, Mr. Musso. I'll check with the panel to see. Mr. Sorcy, no. Dr. Ross, I just have one question for you, Mr. Fudge, and thank you for the efforts to try to clarify the issue of groundwater. Yesterday, in the testimony from National Defense, we received some information that indicates they are likely to go back to the use of groundwater for the base at Suffield. And I'm not sure if they're drawing from the same aquifer or not, but my question to you is based on your knowledge of the groundwater, is the renewed use of groundwater by the base likely to have an effect on the aquifer and potentially these wells?
It was a bit unclear to me, sir, when I listen to that, because I can find it if you give me a moment. But there's actually a quote from one of the witnesses from that was on the D&D panel in the Landwise report. I don't have it right in front of me here, but I could find it. It's in this report, and it states, I forget the person's name. It's one of the D&D civilian personnel. Anyway, she quotes. The usage was about half a million cubic meters of water in 2007, but they shut it down in 2007, and she gives the dates even of the use and when it was shut down, and now they're on river water, and that's all. It's stated in the report, and it seemed to be a lot fuzzier in terms of the. No, well, I heard that they had used groundwater in the past. They're using river water now. There's issues. But in this report, which is pretty recent, it's pretty specific. They were on groundwater. Now they're on river water. I can't speak for what their plans are in the future. Obviously, with groundwater, they got a problem with sand and with dissolved solids, I guess, in
that,
there.
That was my understanding.
Yeah. So, but it is interesting that just to make it even a little fuzzier, in the Landwise report, If we were to go back to that table that shows the allocation of water of what was it, around 400,000 or whatever the number is, 450,000, you know, that what they estimate is the available groundwater, they don't take into consideration the half a million that the base was taking. Like, it's not in those numbers. That's I didn't want to bring it up because it just makes things more complex, but that's why I try and say this whole groundwater thing, like what supply is available, just seems to me like nobody has a really good handle. They don't have that good a handle on it. So they didn't even, they found out, apparently, just as this was already in draft or just about finished, they found out that the base was taking half a million a year out of the aquifer and we're not seeing any decline in other areas of that aquifer. And there's so questions, what are the connections, and are there a lot of lateral flow, say, coming in from the Bow River, that kind of thing. But I thought that was a very positive thing for groundwater in the region if they stopped taking 500,000 a day.
Mm-hmm. I recall you said that.
Yes, that's right, yeah. I thought it was a positive thing, but I can't really speak to what the effect are, because during the time they were taking 500,000 out, say, there has not been any significant, or there hasn't been any changes to groundwater levels that I'm aware of, except at a well close to the base itself, if you look at it, and in the Medicine Hat area. And again, that's noted in the Landwise study. It's noted that there's a bit of groundwater level decline in the area of Medicine Hat, but they're pulling out 6,000 cubic meters a day in Medicine Hat. They're using a lot of groundwater there. So, and that's agricultural use, et cetera. There's, you know, multiple uses there. So with the exception of those two wells, which are near municipal areas that have high levels of groundwater use, the rest of the broad area seems to be in pretty good shape. And, in fact, in some cases, it seems to be increasing levels. So,
okay, if I understand you, what you're saying is that the recharge rate for the other wells has really not changed through that same period.
That's correct. And there is a suggestion, too, that it's not there's obviously recharge. And again, this is talking to McNeil and others. There's some lateral recharge coming in either from the South Saskatchewan or Bow into this aquifer, or perhaps even from the north, from the Red Deer River. It's not just precipitation that's recharging. This is a deep preglacial aquifer, which is a solid aquifer to draw on, it seems.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Fudge. Mr. Denstead, did you wish to redirect?
I have one question, and it's for Mr. Collister. Mr. Lambrecht asked you a couple questions about preliminary assessed critical habitat and if it would be useful to start somewhere. And I guess my question to you, Mr. Collister, is what do you think of the approach taken by Environment Canada to their preliminary assessment of critical habitat?
Well, I guess to add to my comments, it seems to me that in terms of critical habitat, it needs to be applied. It needs to be applied broadly. And in this case, I think it was mentioned this morning, it seemed to have been a reaction to the to this project and the NWA. And I guess that just doesn't seem like an objective approach to assessing or to assessing critical habitat, in this case, preliminarily assess critical habitat?
I was actually thinking about the actual approach taken as opposed to the more nebulous policy.
The methodology, sir?
The approach taken by them.
Well, I'm somewhat familiar with the methodology that was used, and to a certain extent, I got lost in the RSF a little bit. It seems to me that for that particular species, having such a broad application isn't really helpful in terms of conserving the species.
I'm not going to ask any more questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Denstead. This brings us to a conclusion, and I would like to, first of all, thank the panel for returning to present rebuttal evidence. And I'd like to thank everyone at this point for the evidence that they have brought forward to us during these proceedings, for all of the questions that have been posed and the answers received. This is been of great assistance to us in having a better understanding of the proposed project and its potential implications. So I thank all of you for your contribution here in these proceedings. Our next meeting for final argument will be next Thursday, October 30th, and we will meet at the same time at 8:30 in the morning. We also have Friday reserved if needed as well the next day. So I look forward to seeing you again next Thursday. Thank you for your attendance, and I wish you a good weekend and a good few days off from this hearing. Bye for now.